Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Sarah D'Elia, in for Mike Collins. Today, we're joined by Carolina's own comedian, writer, and actress, Fortune Feimster. If you've watched her Netflix specials, seen her on The Mindy Project, or heard her on The Handsome Podcast, you know her comedy is rooted deeply where she's grown up. Belmont, North Carolina, just outside of the city here. A Southern charm who came across her own fortune in Hollywood, she's a natural storyteller. She captivates and connects with audiences, especially when sharing stories of her upbringing. In her 2020 Netflix special, Sweet and Salty, we got to learn a bit about Fortune, from growing up in the conservative South to her early years navigating sports in high school and her sexuality in college, even discussing the intersection of her faith and life in the South. Fortune talks about the South in a way only someone who grew up here could understand. Here's a short clip from her 2020 special, Sweet and Salty, which took place at the McLuhan Theater in Uptown.
Growing up in the South, we loved two things, and that was church and Chili's. Everybody in the South goes to church. There's one on every corner. They even try to fool you with churches. Like right now, you think you're in a theater.
McLuhan Theater is a renovated church and now performance venue. Fortune is back in town for her latest tour, Taking Care of Biscuits. She'll be at Ovens Auditorium this Friday, performing in front of a hometown crowd. But first, she sits down with us. Well, Fortune Feimster, thanks so much for joining us on Charlotte Talks today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
You're back in Charlotte, here to perform on your Taking Care of Biscuits tour. You were born in Charlotte, grew up in Belmont. What's it like performing in front of a hometown crowd?
It's awesome. I mean, honestly, it's one of my favorite crowds to perform in front of because there's a lot of people in the audience that are from Belmont or from one of like either high school or college. So there's a lot of love in the room, not only from, you know, people I've known through a lot of my life, but also, you know, just lovely locals who've been rooting me on for a lot of my career, new people that have discovered me recently and feel a bond being from North Carolina. So it's a very electric room every time I go to Charlotte.
Do you have any go-to spots you have to visit when you're in the area?
Well, normally it's Barbecue King, but our family is distraught that it's now going to be gone. The land has been sold, but that was a staple in our house for my mom's and, you know, 60 years or something for my mom and then my whole life. So I got to find a new one. I like Pinky's. That's always a good place to stop into. And I'm trying to think what else, but a lot of times I do spend a lot of time in Belmont.
It's a great place to be. It's cute. It's exploded over the years too.
It's crazy. It was not like that when I was growing up. It was not a cool place to live. It was very boring, very, dried up, but it really had a resurgence in the last like 20 years.
You have an unforgettable name, and I was reading that you were named after your maternal great-grandmother's maiden name. Did you ever have the opportunity to meet her? And is there a story behind why your parents named you after her?
I never got to meet her. She had long passed by the time I came to be. She had a couple of sisters, and they used to call them the Misfortunes. My grandmother used to tell me that story, and I thought it was so cute. But it was my grandmother who really wanted my mom to name me Fortune. She just thought that it was a cool first name, and a nod to her mother. But my mom thought it was such a big name. So it ended up being my middle name technically. My mom was hesitant about that name just because she just felt like it carried a lot of weight. But I was so close to my grandmother and felt like she just kind of knew me before I knew myself. So I wanted to go by that name as a nod to her and who she saw me as from the early days.
Mm. Well, you've been on tour since April. That's a long time. It's almost the end of November. What are
And it will go on much longer.
What are you?
A year and a half.
Oh my goodness. What are you getting from this time on the road? What are you working out?
I am, like with all my hours, I start where the last one left off. I start this set talking about a trip I had actually with my now ex. And then it goes into the current life of like where I'm at as far as being single again and stuff with my mom. And I also deal with talk about my childhood and do some nostalgic stories there. People, especially when I go home to Charlotte, love those childhood stories because some people were there for those events. I talk about Girl Scouts outings and Halloween and it's going back to that sort of silly type of story I like to tell that you kind of saw with my special Sweet and Salty. So it's a whole new hour since the last time I was in Charlotte, and I think people are really enjoying this stuff. I have more stuff that I will be talking about, you know, that sort of delves more into my personal life, but I just haven't quite gone there yet. But I have, you know, it's going to be another year or so before I film a special, so there's time to live life and see what unfolds.
Yeah. How do you balance that truth telling with personal story and maybe wanting to keep some things just for yourself or for your family? Like, how do you walk that line?
I feel like I have a pretty good judge of what that line is. I kind of know if something's like a little too taboo, or if it's just meant to be like, this is for my information only. I mean, I know people would probably like to hear more about what's going on in my personal life, but I just haven't figured out what that is, what I want to even say about it. So, you know, but I also think it's different. Like a lot of the things I talk about that were hard in my life and past specials, I've long been removed from those situations. So I had many years to put things into perspective and to find the silver linings and to see the, you know, the funny part of it. It's different. This is new for me to be living these things while I'm supposed to talk about them, you know what I mean? Mm. So I just haven't found the words yet, but hopefully in time.
Yeah. Is it therapeutic in a way to kind of be working them out in your material and living them in real time?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be. I haven't really let myself go there too much yet, but maybe at some point I will, just to see what that feels like. And again, not every aspect of it. Some of it's just for me. Yeah, I find it therapeutic when I talk about it online. So I would imagine that would be the same in stand-up, for sure.
Well, you've been traveling all over and during a time when the country is more divided now than ever. How do you navigate that on tour and in your comedy as you travel to both red and blue states?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely feel that people are stressed and it's hard. It's hard out there for a lot of people. The government shut down, you know, people need help. Things are more expensive than ever. There's a lot of tension and a lot of stress. So the only thing I know to do is to provide some relief, you know, for an hour and a half. I don't dig too deep into political stuff because there are much smarter, more informed people that we should turn to for that. And I am more of a like human rights person and wanted people to be treated right and fairly. And, you know, I have gone into many red states over my career, and In some red states or cities, I sell more tickets in the red cities than I do the blue cities, surprisingly, because there are people there who need representation and a voice and are, you know, devoid of that in that area that they live. So when someone comes through that they can resonate with, I think they're like so relieved, like, thank you for coming here. You can't shy away from those places. Otherwise, we're all just living in our own bubble. And what good does that do? You have to go into those places and tell your stories. And, you know, maybe you're talking to people that already thought like you, or, you know, you didn't have to convince them anything. But I've certainly had people come with other people or like, I've never heard of you. And I see things a little differently now from, you know, hearing your perspective, and that's always an amazing byproduct. So yeah, I do not shy away from any of those places. Mm-hmm. And being a Southerner too, you know, I want to help with any progress I can in those areas.
Yeah. What does progress look like to you in those areas?
I mean, just people being more open to other people, you know, like, there's not just one type of person or one religion or one ethnicity. I mean, there's room for everybody here, and we have to like start allowing other people to be who they are and not, you know, judge them for that and not have laws against them, take away rights. You know, it's just about like, you live your life. This is not affecting you, you know, in any way. There's this need for control that's unnecessary. So yeah, progress is just being more open-minded, I guess, and that applies to a lot of different people.
Well, audiences really got to know you in your 2020 stand-up special, Sweet and Salty, which was filmed here in Charlotte at the McGlowan Theater.
Yeah.
You talk a lot in your comedy about personal stories, the importance of representation. And when you were ready to come out, there wasn't a lot of representation in media and in comedy. Mm-hmm. So now you're a successful Southern comedian who is very open about their own journey. You're the role model. You're the representation. How does that feel?
I mean, it's amazing. I am so happy that we've come to a point where there are a lot more of me or people like me than, you know, voices like mine than I ever had growing up. I take that responsibility seriously to, you know, try to lead by example, be a decent human. And, you know, when I was married, to show what, and it was at the time, a healthy relationship looks like, and respect and stuff. And then now in going through a divorce, trying to also carry that respect with me in this journey, and just by telling my own stories and what it was like growing up, and especially in the South, and not fitting in and not knowing who you were, like, those stories are important and help people sort of come to terms with their own journey. So I am very grateful to be any sort of representation in a positive way for anybody.
We have to take a quick break here, but we'll have more when we come back with Fortune Feimster, who is performing at Ovens Auditorium this Friday. This is Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org. Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Sarah D'Elia. Before the break, we were discussing LGBTQ representation in comedy. Here's a clip from Fortune's 2020 Netflix special, Sweet and Salty, on how representation matters.
But, you know, I look back at that time in college, and I couldn't believe that I wasn't out. But honestly, it wasn't like I was in the closet and I was hiding. I just didn't see myself represented in the world. Back then, like I said, there was no YouTube, there was no Will and Grace, no Frozen. Nothing that I could relate to. Turns out representation matters. It does. So if there is a little girl out there in Oklahoma right now wearing sweatpants and running across the swimming pool, I see you. I see you. It is not a phase.
Representation is a big part of her journey, but another piece is her love and relationship with her mother. I want to talk about your number one fan, your mom, Ginger. I actually saw Chelsea Handler in Charlotte earlier this year when she was at Ovens, and she spotted your mom in the crowd. told everyone who she was. Everyone applauded. She got like a standing little ovation. It was great. That's cute. So sweet. And then she moved your mom up to the front, and it was really cute.
I heard about that.
I know your mom has been involved with the Gaston County PFLAG chapter. That's parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays. You have a really funny bit about that as well. How meaningful has it been to have her support?
Oh, it's so, so important, you know, like for any parent to support their kid in any way is a blessing, you know, and the fact that, you know, I talked about Sweet and Salty being so nervous to tell my parents that I was gay, and having her go from that, you know, coming out to like president of the PFLAG to, you know, going to Charlotte Pride parades and being an ally for all these people in the South whose, you know, own mother disowned them. She's hugged constantly by gay men, just, you know, wanting the love of a mother, and she's so happy to provide that. So I'm really proud of her for what she did with it. You know, obviously I'm grateful for it personally, having that support, but I think she surprised herself with this new journey. She didn't, you know, you don't know that if your kid's going to be gay and how you'll react to that. So she just found a really cool path with it in a way that was able to support me, but also support a lot of other people. So I think that's really cool what she has done.
Yeah. And I saw you recently got to guest host Jimmy Kimmel Live, and you got to interview your mom. I mean, that's a pretty cool moment. Interviewing your mom on national TV. What was that like?
That was awesome. It was last minute. Someone had to cancel, and somebody on my team was just like, what about your mom? And I was like, I don't know. Like, she literally had chemo that morning and had to get on. I'm like, are you sure? Like, she's like, I'm not missing this for anything. So that was a really special thing. To get to have with, it was special for me to get to guest host, but then to have my mom be on the show was really amazing. And her, a lot of people saw her interview, and it helped spread some awareness. She has cancer, and it helped spread awareness about this particular type of cancer that she has. And you know, just not only talk about cancer, but talk about being an ally. So she had some really important messages, and to get to do that on a national platform was awesome.
And you chose to share that with your fans earlier this year about your mom's journey with this cancer diagnosis. And I wanted to ask, how is your mom doing today?
You know, she could be better. It's a journey. It's definitely an advanced stage of cancer that is not curable. So I think we're, you know, sort of accepting the fact that, like, it's not going to go away. This is kind of her life now. But, you know, doing the best we can to keep it from spreading, to try to have a good quality of life, and to, you know, keep her around for as long as possible. But she's going, it's a lot. And it's not as Like, it's not one of those cancers where you're like, she's gonna fight, beat it and fight it, and it's, she'll be cancer free. Like, unfortunately, that's not her journey. She's got it, and it ain't going anywhere. She's fighting a good fight and being, as far as, you know, trying to stay alive for as long as possible, and staying very positive. So that's the best we can do, because we don't have a lot of control over, you know, the chemo working or not, but she definitely has impressed me with her resilience. So, you know, all I can do is hope, that she's around for as long as it allows her to be, and that she doesn't have a lot of pain.
Yeah. I imagine that being on the road for as long as you've been, dealing with the divorce, dealing with your mom's illness, I mean, all that travel, all that back and forth, what kind of toll does that take? I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I just haven't thought about it too much until today. She, sorry.
No, you're fine.
You know, it's hard. It's definitely taken a toll. But, you know, for the most part, I'm pretty good. I have, I work a lot, so that's a nice distraction, because, you know, my job is to make people laugh. So that's really nice to get to be around laughter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. What does comedy provide for you during a year like this?
Well, it's funny. My whole job is to, like I said, be a distraction for other people. I didn't think I would need the distractions as well. But that's just life. You know, everybody has to show up to their job when hard things are happening. You can't just not live. So, you know, I'm very lucky that I have a job that I love so much. So it makes my day to day really enjoyable and happy. And so at least when things are hard, I have that juxtaposition of some really amazing things too. So I love being on the road. I'm, you know, so happy to be coming to Charlotte, and my family will all be there, and my mom will be there as long as she feels up for it. And then I'm filming this show with Will Ferrell right now. And God, that has been like such a treat, because I go to work every day and laugh with him. So it's weird to have like this really hard stuff going on in my life, and then the greatest, coolest career stuff happening at the same time. But I'm happy. I'm at least happy to have the good stuff helping to counterbalance this other crap.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on top of all that, you have a podcast, Handsome, with Dignitaro and Mae Martin. I mean, I don't know how you do it all. That's so much going on personally and professionally. But yeah. What kind of outlet is that podcast giving you?
Oh man, that podcast has been such a treat that came out of nowhere. You know, Take wanted to start a podcast, I think it's been 2 years now. And we just didn't know like that it would resonate so much with people. And it found an it found an audience like immediately, and people are so passionate about it. And it's a very silly podcast. We always laugh like it's about nothing and everything. But what has been the most unexpected part of this Handsome podcast is in this year particularly, all of us have had at different times some very challenging things happen. May's gone through breakups, and Tig's lost a good friend, and my mom got sick and I'm going through a divorce. And we have allowed each other at different times on this podcast to just be real. And we have pride with, each other, and we've not, you know, no one's held it back. And we've offered wisdom to each other and support, and then we'll laugh about something insane and ridiculous. Like, it goes in and out of this like earnest thing and then the silly thing. But I just like that we're just three friends that are having life experiences, that, and none of us are afraid to face those together and on a podcast. So it's kind of a neat little slice of life situation going on with us.
Yeah. And you all are, you're never like in the same place when you record it, right?
Rarely. We can barely find time to record. So in person is even harder. But yeah, one of us is always filmed. Like, I was in Toronto filming, then I left, and then May came into Toronto, and then May left, and then Tig came, and then they got back, and then I went to a show. Like, it's, everyone's just always doing Tig now back in Toronto, so it's always something.
Yeah. Well, for folks that haven't listened to the podcast, there's the visual element of it where you guys kind of record the Zoom screen, but if you were just listening to the audio of it, you would think you all were in the same room. That's the kind of chemistry that you have.
It feels like that to us. We're so used to it now that it feels, you know, we feel just as close on the Zoom as we do in person. Although, you know, when we do get to be in person, it's such a treat, and you can feel the chemistry even more. So we definitely want to try to do that as more if we can.
Yeah. How does your comedy change when you're going through a tough time, or does it? Do you kind of compartmentalize, this is my life, this is what I'm going through, and then this is my work? Do you have to kind of split it and put it in two different boxes?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sharing, you know, a little bit about my mom's journey just because people are so invested. And I've talked about her my entire career. She's such a huge part of my stand-up. And so, you know, I asked her when she was diagnosed, like, you know, you tell me what you want me to share or not share. This is your journey. But I think it's, you know, we ultimately ended up sharing it, and it's helping her. People all over the world are sending her cards and well wishes, and she likes that there's some awareness brought to it. So I compartmentalize it in that, like, I got to do my job. I'm there to make people laugh, you know, and I want to do that. Like, I don't want to, like, be a throwing all my stuff on people too. Now, I don't mind sharing things, but then I want to make you laugh. I want to do my job. But if I can also use my platform in any way to help, with awareness, or, you know, help my mom have cool experiences, that's awesome as well.
Yeah. What do you think it is about your mom that people connect with so much?
Well, she's so funny because all the stories I've told about her are ridiculous, but they're all true. So she's always been a character. So people have loved her for years just based on all the ridiculous things she's said. And she's so full of personality. But I think at this point, she just, in a weird way, feels like everyone's mother. So they just feel an attachment there to her, having heard about her for so long. So there's a lot of love there for her, from people, even if they don't really know her. And when you see, like, videos of her, she's just full of life and personality and a cheery disposition. You're just very drawn to her. So I think ultimately people are just drawn to her. Like, you saw it at Chelsea's show, you know, that was Chelsea's audience, even though we have some crossover. People are like, oh, look at this adorable woman.
Yes, it was like a local celebrity had walked into Ovens Auditorium.
Yeah, probably grinning from ear to ear, smiling at people. Even if you did not know her or me, you're like, this person is lovely. And she just brings a lot of joy with her wherever she goes.
Yeah. What is making you laugh these days?
My friends, just the people in my life. I'm very lucky to be surrounded by some really funny people. Will Ferrell, laugh with him every week. My good friends are funny and comedians. So, my mom makes me laugh. Like, it's just people. I'll watch stand up some, but mainly I'm just like trying to take in the life experiences right now.
And what's giving you hope these days?
When I travel for stand up, I meet some really amazing people. When you turn the news on, you see all the bad stuff happening and you go, oh man, where are we going here? Like, are we doomed? Or we, you know, you get this like negative thing come over you. And then I go out into the world, these different cities, and I meet so many nice people, so many good people, like good hearted people. And I go, okay, here, it's there. It's all out there. We just don't hear about it because the noise can't, you know, feels like it cancels that stuff out. But there's a lot of people out there who care and have big hearts, and that makes me hopeful.
Yeah. And finally, what do you hope people take away? How do you, like, if there was a feeling that they could take away from your show when they're walking out the door, what do you hope that feeling is?
I just want to feel a little lighter, you know, just feel good and like that there's a bunch of people around them in that theater that the energy is very just positive and silly and fun. You can feel the lightness in that room of just like, just a goodness to the people that are in there. And that makes you feel good to sit in that for an hour and a half. So I want people to just leave there just feeling better about the day, what their coming week. So, you know, just laughing is good for your soul. We need it right now. So I'm happy to for people to come and to provide that for them, even if it's just an hour and a half. It does make a difference.
Yeah, it does. Well, Fortune Feimster, thanks so much for being on Charlotte Talks today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate you chatting with me, Sarah.
Fans can catch Fortune Feimster this Friday at Ovens Auditorium. Coming up after the break, we turn to friendship expert Anna Goldfarb. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE listeners and the Gambrill Center at Queens, presenting author Robin Wall Kimmerer, known for braiding sweetgrass and the service berry, sharing perspectives on Indigenous knowledge and ecology on December 2nd at the Gambrill Center. More at gambrillcenter.org. Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Sarah D'Elia, in for Mike Collins. It's been a busy year in news and partisan politics. Polarization has seemed to only deepen, and it can have an effect on personal relationships with friends and even family. As we gear up for the holidays, we wanted to take some time to revisit a conversation we had last year with Anna Goldfarb. Anna is known as the New York Times friendship correspondent. She's a journalist, speaker, and the author of the book Modern Friendship. And Anna joins us now. Thanks for helping us navigate the Thanksgiving dinner table, Anna. We appreciate it.
Oh, of course. I'm really excited to be here. This is such an important conversation to be having.
Well, you've written a lot about all the different facets of friendships, how they begin, how they thrive, and how they can sometimes end. What strategies can you offer to help maintain a friendship when political views are clashing?
Well, you know, political views don't have to end a friendship. And I also want to say sometimes people can be on the same team, but still have conflicting ideas of what your party should be doing. So I've seen a lot of chatter just with my own blue friends, and they still have schisms. So this really doesn't even, it spills over into all parts of our life when you know, we are in our bubbles. We are, have so many different identities. And this is historically new to have so many different identities. So the culture is changing and culture is moving faster. And I think people are just really having trouble wrapping their heads around what does this all mean? And one of the best things you can do is be a friend, act like a friend to your friends. And what that means is, yes, to be respectful, but also to refrain from criticizing or judging or blaming. I did my own research into, you know, do political divides rupture friendships? And it, I found, like, in my research, it's only about 11% of friendships have ended due to politics. It was higher with, you know, liberal women and higher in the age of Trump. But most people, this isn't a friendship ending issue. It's something that can be navigated, but it can be navigated if you keep those tenets in mind of, you know, criticizing, blaming, threatening. That's going to alienate anyone. So if you have a strategy, you know who your friends are, you've identified them, then it's like, be a friend to them and don't put them on the defense. Don't, you know, those are called disconnection habits, from Dr. William Glasser. Those are things that alienate people, that push people away. Yeah. And you want to bring in more connecting habits of respecting, like appreciating, understanding, like, hey, we both have different ideas of what this country needs, but I want to learn more. And, you know, just giving people, making people feel safe to share their viewpoints with you.
Yeah. It sounds like boundaries are very important. Maybe establishing what's on the table to talk about, what's not, what crosses the line. Do you have any advice for friends that are on opposing political sides? Or, like you said, there's many schisms within political parties that they feel differently about how a particular issue should be addressed. What do you say about boundaries and kind of like setting the rules for what we're going to talk about and what can't be talked about?
Well, I think it's more like being honest and vulnerable. Friendships require trust. And trust requires vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So that's where we need to start of, you know, this is a sensitive issue for me. You can tell your friend, like, this is a very sensitive issue for me. I feel like we can agree to disagree, and I love you. I value your friendship. I appreciate your friendship. And this, you know, just this is a sensitive topic for me. And I think any friend would be happy to respect that and understand if you explain, this is sensitive for me, because then any friend would be like, oh, I get it. Like, this is a pain point for you. And sometimes these issues, they impact us differently. Some issues to someone is theoretical, and while the issue is concrete for me. So to have the language of, this is a sensitive topic for me because, and here's how I'd like to address it in the future. Like, I understand you. I've had to cut friendships off because they didn't respect that. Mm-hmm. When I said this topic is sensitive for me, and they keep bringing it up, and then it became an issue of them disrespecting my boundaries. But it wasn't the topic; it was how they dealt with the topic and what, how that made me feel. So then it became something else. Mm-hmm. So that's what we want to prevent. We want to make our friends feel loved, safe, valued. We can give that to our friends. We can.
Well, you've done a lot of writing on this subject, and there was one piece in particular for the New York Times where you kind of broke down how to diffuse tension at the dinner table around the holidays. So what can you offer listeners about things that they can do, or like game plan ahead of time when you know you're going to be heading into a situation where maybe your boundaries have not always been respected of what you want to talk about and what you don't want to talk about, or you're just going to be in a room full of people where you know politics is a touchy subject and it's going to be brought up somehow?
You know, one thing you can do is role playing. Like, let's with a friend or a significant other, like, okay, what are we going to say when these topics are brought up? Let's role play a little bit and have something in the can. Like, this is what I'll say to someone who comes at me with an insensitive comment. You can say, okay, I'll consider that. Like, what can you say to shut it down? You can also, one of my favorite techniques is HALT. It's taken from the recovery community. Of where are you at physiologically? HALT stands for hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So those are sort of like the flashing red moments of, I'm going to be irritable if any of these things are are sort of on display. So maybe take a nap, maybe eat a little bit before Thanksgiving dinner so you're not hangry and you're more reactive. Those are all things you can do. You know, take a little nap, eat a little granola bar. Maybe you'll just be in better position. You can also bring a friend. You can bring an ally. You can bring someone who can help you diffuse. And you can tell them beforehand, you know, I'm nervous about this topic. If this topic comes up, can you help me, you know, extricate myself from the scenario? And just, and one of the most important things is to know what success looks like. You know, I don't think people spend a lot of time thinking about that for these family get-togethers of, you know, maybe success looks like I keep my cool. Maybe success looks like I don't get baited into a screaming match about XYZ. And just have a goal of, you know what, this would be a successful dinner if I just keep my calm, keep my cool, and have a, you know, a perfectly pleasant interaction with these people that care about you, that, you know, that there's love there.
Yeah. I really liked the piece of advice about having an ally at the dinner table. And at first I was like, ooh, but sometimes there's not a baked in ally, but your suggestion is, well, bring someone just because they're not immediate family or whatever, like bring a friend who doesn't have somewhere to go for Thanksgiving, bring them along. I think that's really great advice. Getting back to the friendship aspect of it, are there telltale signs that politics is damaging someone's friendship, that there is, you know, political anxiety, like we talked about earlier, that is impacting it? What are some of those signs that people should look out for in those friendships?
Well, if you feel disrespected, if you feel drained, if you feel like your friend is misunderstanding you or not giving you the benefit of the doubt, those are things we expect from our friends. You know, friendships are such a pleasurable relationship because it's a relationship of equals. It's one of the few relationships as an adult where you're on this unequal footing. You know, you have a boss who's ahead, maybe parents, children, like everything, there's a power dynamic. So friendships go awry when you feel like one friend is trying to dominate the other. And this can come out with a host of things, but it can especially come out with politics of, I can't believe you voted for that person. You know, you should know better. I thought that you had better values. I thought you had a, you know, like those kinds of things rupture that equal footing of peers. And that's, friends will not tolerate it. It's a violation of what a friendship should be. A better strategy is to say like, listen, I love you. We might disagree on how best to chart our country's path, but I trust that you're coming from a good place, a well-intentioned place. I'm coming from a well-intentioned place too. And let's just keep the conversation going. You know, one of the most important things in a democracy is an exchange of ideas. Mm-hmm. Like the way I think of it is what chance do I have to help influence my friends see my point of view if I shut down discussion? You know, this is our duty as a citizen, as a citizen in America today. It is our duty to keep these relationships open. And I'm so impressed with the Braver Angels mission. I think that is absolutely the way forward of, I believe in this country. I believe in a democracy. This is what a democracy requires. It's tolerating other points of view. And just like Rich was saying, of we need to come together. We need to compromise. And I want to do it. I want to do it with my friends who I love and treasure. We can model that for our friends. We can model what respectful discourse looks like. And hopefully they'll take it to their other friendships and they'll show this is how we practice respectful friendships.
That's really well said. And thank you for tying that back to the Braver Angels work. I do want to take touch on social media and the role that social media plays in our friendships, because there are some friends that I haven't seen for years, but I still feel connected to them, connected to their lives. We live on opposite sides of the country, but social media keeps us connected. But after the election, some folks have wanted to or needed to, for mental health reasons, kind of pared down their social media friends. Maybe there are certain things that they don't want to see, or there's rhetoric that they don't want in their feeds. is that okay to do? Is that what, and what message does that send to that person if, you know, all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, ooh, I'm not on that person's friends list anymore. What are they telling me?
You know, this is a bigger problem where social media does not set us up for success with these nuanced political takes. It is not designed for a respectful conversation. It's designed to get outrage. It's designed to run on anger. Mm. So we are not set up for success with sharing, you know, with social media. It's just, there are bigger forces than you or I can control with our posts. If you do a sensible post, it gets no engagement. And then it's not shuffled to the top of everyone's feed. So this is a game that we're not going to win. And I don't think social media is a great place for these nuanced, you know, level-headed takes. But that said, you absolutely can block or hide anyone that you want in your feed. It is not always personal. You can love someone but not want to see their social media posts. And that's part of the agreement you make when you join these sites. People may not want to, they may not want to see pictures of my cat. It's not even always politics. Like, they might want to see pictures of, you know, my bread. No one's obligated to do anything on social media, but that's the, it cuts both ways of, listen, this is the game. It's not for everyone's cup of tea, and you are absolutely allowed to hide as you see fit, certainly.
Well, let's talk about neighbors for a moment. You've done some writing on how to be a good neighbor, and in Charlotte, there's over 100 people moving to the city daily. What ways can we extend ourselves to be a good neighbor, which sometimes turns into a friendship, sometimes not, even if we know ahead of time that we do not see politically eye to eye?
Well, being a good neighbor, of course, is all about respect. It's about communication. It's about being open to feedback. And it's about help. I mean, one of the most important things we can do to fight climate change is to be friendly to our neighbors, because these are the people that will have the most relevant information for us. Like you said, if the electricity goes out, if, you know, there's some sort of like disaster, your community are the people that are going to be the most important for you. So being a good a neighbor is really about giving permission of, listen, I'm available. I'm here to help. Here's my information. Here are things I'm willing to do. Like, I'm happy to check your mail if you're out of, you know, just to communicate and to give permission. I don't think we do it enough. I think there's a lot of fear and mistrust in our society. We have the lowest trust ever in government, in press, in all these institutions. And of course, it's bound to reflect in our social lives, because this is how our society is right now. So you can fight that. You can say, listen, I'm here to build trust. You can count on me. And just model it for your neighbors and show them, this is how I practice being a good neighbor.
Yeah.
And give them permission to do the same.
We are running out of time, but I have one more question for you. If there was one thing that you hope people will take to their Thanksgiving or holiday, whatever family gathering they're going to this week, one piece of advice that you hope that they hold dear as we walk into maybe some contentious environments, what would that be?
You know, I think everyone's having a really hard time. It's a really uncertain time. So the best thing you can do is give people certainty, because uncertainty creates anxiety. Mm. So one of the best things you can do for your friendships and beyond is to give certainty of, you know, I won't be available to talk for the next week, but you can reach me by email. Just giving people certainty of, I'm going to be here. Here's what works for me. I'm not, you know, telling your friends you love them and telling them why. Here's why I love being your friend. Here's what I appreciate about our friendship. I'm not going anywhere for a long time. And just giving people certainty is the best thing you can do this holiday season.
Wise words to end on there, and keep with us this holiday season. That was Anna Goldfarb, writer of Modern Friendship. We thank Anna for joining us, as well as comedian Fortune Feimster. This has been Charlotte Talks. I'm Sarah D'Elia. Have a wonderful holiday week.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.